An activist investor takes aim at Intel. There's a lot to talk about there with regard to its business model. Plus, Apple's amazing year. Still two trading days left, but boy, this is one for the books. And then Boeing, talk about a momentous day. Yes, indeed, there is one for that company as well. This is the Market Wake Up by Yahoo Finance. I'm Andy Serwer, along with Javier David and Jared Blickery. So Jared, a lot of interesting stuff here with Third Point and Intel, and it sort of speaks to the way the whole business is going these days too, isn't it?
Yeah, Intel has been dead money for a few years now. And if you compare it, I'm just going to start with some broad sweeps here. If you compare it to other semiconductors, a lot of these names that we know like AMD, Micron, they peaked in 1999, 2000 during the tech bubble. And it took them what seemed like forever just to build up the momentum to be major players and to eclipse their previous record highs. And most of them have done it. Intel has not been able to do it. And other companies that haven't, for instance, actually, I mentioned Micron. Micron hasn't been able to do it, but that's a memory company. That's more commoditized. Intel, this is a company that designs processors. That's one silo. And then they manufacture, they fabricate processors. That's another. And what Dan Loeb, this activist hedge fund investor, wants to do is potentially separate them. Now, you can read into this a few different ways. So far, I don't have access to the letter that he sent to Intel just yet. We only have some Reuters reports, but it looks like that could be on the table here. And analysts don't seem too gung-ho on the move because the business has been integrated this way for a very long time. I mean, going back decades and decades. And to separate them, you have to have that unlock of value. And is there value to be unlocked that is greater than the cost of separating these two entities? And analysts are casting some doubt that that may be possible. Now, it seems that Loeb also wants to maybe shed some dead weight, and that would be some recent purchases. I think the biggest was Mobileye back in 2017 for $15 billion, just north of that. And you know, that transaction itself really hasn't produced much for Intel. Mobileye is a great company, but Intel once wanted to be too many different things. I think it spread itself too thin and it had all these institutional legacy constraints and it just couldn't innovate the way a lot of other firms were. You know, AMD has been eating its lunch. Intel was not able to make a 7-nanometer chip and it's going to have to outsource that. So they've also suffered from loss of real talent here. And that's one of the things that Dan Loeb cited in his letter, that they can't afford to lose more senior designers because then they won't be able to innovate. And the chip industry as a whole has gone through some radical changes. I've talked about this in the past on some of these podcasts here, where fabrication is its own thing and design is completely another. A lot of companies like NVIDIA don't manufacture or fabricate any chips whatsoever. They just outsource this. At the same time, Intel is losing its client base because they're making their own chips. Those clients include Microsoft, Amazon, Apple. Those are some big names. They might only account for maybe 10% of revenue, but when you put it all together, there have to be changes made. But the initial reaction that I'm seeing from the street is this is a little bit too arbitrary and it may be difficult to unlock some value here.
Yeah, the knives have been out for Intel for quite some time. I think the decision by Apple to launch their own components for their own processors for their laptops and desktops and so forth really kind of quickened the conversation in a lot of ways. It kind of underscored in a lot of ways the trouble that Intel's been having. They've got, Jared, as you mentioned, some problems on the manufacturing side. About a two or three weeks ago, they were the subject of a letter of inquiry from Congress seeking some information on some computer chips that were used by China to deploy against the Uyghurs. So there's all this stuff floating around out there, and none of it is particularly beneficial to the company. As Jared, you mentioned, there are a bunch of reasons why Intel is kind of having its lunch eaten by the competitors, the loss of business from a lot of these larger companies that for a long time used to be a client is a real, you know, sort of force multiplier. And Loeb is the kind of guy, he makes a lot of waves when he sends a letter to somebody or he acquires stock and asks for a company to make changes. And a lot of times, even if he doesn't exactly get everything he wants, he gets people's attention and he gets the management's attention. And people kind of don't want the attention, that particular sort of attention that comes with an activist investor who's snapping up shares and then demanding changes to the company. So on some level, they have to placate him. So I'll be curious to see what Intel's next move is here, I think. And they have to, it's clear that something has to change. There's just too much bad press. There's too much problems in terms of the manufacturing. There's too much just overall uncertainty. And yes, we're in an environment where uncertainty reigns, but at the same time, shareholders are not happy, and the stock is down, I think, nearly 20% year to date. And that's substantially lagging the big name competitors in its space.
And it really is a legacy company, too, Javier, like you're indicating. And of course, you know, the pride of Santa Clara, California was one of the original Silicon Valley giants. And of course, you know, joined at the hip with Microsoft back in the Wintel days. And that refers back to what Jared was talking about when the stock peaked in 2000, around then. And that's just truly stunning that it's never surpassed that, which, of course, Microsoft did. It took them a long time, but they did. Their tag mate, their tag team partner there, I guess, right? And Bob Swan, the CEO of Intel, who I know a bit, spent some time with him pre-COVID, you know, has his hands full. I mean, the last time I talked to him, he was dealing with all kinds of problems with China and the Trump administration and distribution of chips and manufacturing of chips over there. And now, you know, Dan Loeb, full disclosure, of course, Dan Loeb was an activist investor in our parent company, Yahoo, and made some changes, helped bring in Marissa Mayer to be our CEO. Remember that episode? You know, he's been under fire for a while. And it's not a great place to be. And I think, you know, what you're talking about, Jared, with this whole sea change of separating fabricating from design. I mean, back when it was Wintel, back in those days for Intel, there was just one thing. In fact, they kept a little manufacturing facility in Santa Clara. And Loeb talks about that in his letter, saying that, you know, we need this expertise to stay on shore. But then, you know, you hear from analysts and people come from Swan's camp that, oh, they were going to, you know, try to do that, but also try to, you know, split up the operations and do more things with Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, TSCM. So it's a hot story there. Speaking of Silicon Valley giants, the big kahuna of them all, $2.29 trillion market cap. Apple and its incredible year. And Javier, I think what makes it truly amazing is the kind of performance during this crazy year. And then just given the scale of the company, you know, in other words, there's the tyranny of large numbers where it gets harder, very hard to grow at this rate when you're that big, right?
Well, in one way, yes, absolutely. But in another way, and I think that I've mentioned this in several shows prior, like Apple really is one of these companies that can do no wrong. And its brand loyalty, along with the respect and kind of its dominance in the marketplace, for a long time, it was seen as the battle of the heavyweights, the iPhone versus Samsung's Galaxy. That for a long time, and even Galaxy at one point even edged past them in market share. But they successfully kind of transitioned from that whole horse race dynamic that was there. And Apple, the iPhone is back on top. B, the move into services, I feel like we can't talk about this enough, about how dominant these folks have been and how that has contributed to their 2.4 trillion, I guess, what's in a number, right? But in a lot of ways, the stock's up 85% year to date. That's staggering. And if you think about it, the NASDAQ composite up, you know, a paltry 42%. It just kind of goes to show you, like in an environment where The tech industry is under fire from within and without, and everyone is trying to investigate and launch all sorts of antitrust probes and questioning big tech's dominance. In a lot of ways, Apple has maintained its Teflon. And I think that the stocks move, in addition to the chatter around, you know, a potential Apple electric car sometime within the next 3 to 4 years, just kind of goes to show you the way that the brand has ingratiated itself into consumer, into the lives of consumers. We all are wedded to our phones, and that's not going to change. In a way, Apple's a beneficiary of the stay-at-home environment because people are, A, on their mobile devices a lot more, and B, the services which will help boost viewership into Apple TV and all of these other neat bells and whistles that they've unveiled in the last year or so. So, you know, I think in probably sometime next year, I will probably be talking about $3 trillion or maybe even more than that.
Yeah, $3 trillion, $4 trillion, $5 trillion. I mean, you add up these mega caps and suddenly you're talking about almost real money. Well, then you got to get to the Federal Reserve balance sheet. That's a solid $7 trillion. But back to Apple. Yeah, what a comeback story. And it's been a comeback story several times. You know, I think back to the late 90s when everybody had just counted out the company and Steve Jobs had moved on, kind of forced out, a little bit of disgrace there, learned a lot from that experience, came back and just nailed it. And now it's more of an execution story. It's more of an operation story. Except you get these little glimpses every now and then about what could be. So I think it was last week that there was some rumor swirling that maybe Apple and Tesla would get together. And that comes after Elon Musk had tweeted that he had sought out Tim Cook to possibly buy Tesla a few years ago when they were really, really struggling. And according to Elon, Tim Cook didn't pick up the call, didn't arrange a meeting. And all of that makes you think of the incredible possibilities down the road. And, you know, we were talking about chip stocks before. Everything, all this mad money rush into tech is really about all the disruption that's going on. Biggest word of 2020, acceleration. So that brought forward a lot of these changes that are seemingly inevitable right now. But all in all, you know, you have these supporting companies, and then you have these companies that are just really leading the movements. And whether it's an Apple car that Apple makes, probably not, or even if they just stick with their present business model of producing these products that everybody loves, supporting them with services and building on that, company seems to have a bright future. I'm simply impressed by any company this size, even over $1 trillion, that can turn in a performance like Apple in a year like this, over 80%. It's just pretty amazing.
Yeah, over 80%, Jared, when the market's about 15, as I said, we still have 2 trading sessions left to go here, but it's kind of in the bag, isn't it? And I think, Javier, when that point that you made about services is extremely spot on. And here's why. Because when you ask the general investor even, they really don't know that. I mean, they know it around the edges a little bit. But the growth story inside that company that is services is still under-recognized. In the same way, I would argue that, say, AWS is with Amazon. For most people, for most investors even. Certainly for most people. But I would say even for most investors. And so, to my mind, when you have these situations that are under-recognized by the general investing public, it means there's still opportunity. Now, it's just crazy to talk about company with the biggest market capitalization on the planet as having upside. But here we are. I mean, you know, I think there's still opportunity for them. You know, the thing that could stop them is themselves. And then again, the government and governments, plural. So, you know, that's really their biggest enemy. And it's not just the US. Remember, it's Europe where things are more difficult, and it's China where things are more difficult. So, you know, if you're the head of government affairs at Apple, I mean, in a way, that's your biggest job. That's the biggest job at the company, is the person who oversees that arena. Let's move on and talk about another stalwart, well, former stalwart, and that is Boeing. First of all, Jared, it seems that people are flying a little bit, and we want to talk about that briefly, but also about sort of a landmark day for Boeing.
Yeah, just looking on the passenger side, people running through airports, getting through TSA. Well, the TSA screened 1.3 million passengers on Sunday, and that was the highest level since mid-March. That's kind of when things started getting shut down here in the U.S. But guess what? Still 50% below the same time last year. And you think about who those people are. These aren't necessarily all business travels that have been lost here. A lot of people did not fly home or fly to loved ones for the holidays. So this has been a major disruptor. I think I get the sense that people chose either Thanksgiving or Christmas, not doing both. And there's definitely a need to return to normalcy here. Part of that, and this is a separate issue, but it all seems to be coming together right now, is Boeing. 737 MAX took off from MIA, Miami, landed in LaGuardia today. First flight for a 737 MAX in 2 years. That's significant. And, you know, before we went on here, we just kind of, I was reminiscing about the moves that Boeing stock has made in 2017, 2018, especially 17. It was just the entire Dow, it seemed. It would go up just about every day. You know, the Dow was point weighted, and Boeing eventually at its peak became a $446 stock, and it crashed all the way down to 89, and now it's up to 216. So it's well more than doubled, but just kind of a shadow of its former self in terms of its size and influence in the market. But its dominance in the skies is beyond dispute here. We've seen orders tick up for the Boeing 737 MAX. People seem to be more amenable to flying on it, maybe simply because there are so many other concerns in the world today. But nevertheless, it looks good. Boeing is on track again, and I'm taking that as a good sign.
I think one of the things that remains to be seen, though, as you know, the benefit of having this mired plane flying in the skies again is whether or not customers are going to be comfortable flying on a 737 MAX. So American was the airline that deployed the 737 MAX on Tuesday, and they made it very clear that they would accommodate any passengers who were worried about flying. So I think you're going to see a lot more 737 MAXs taking to the skies, but you will also probably see a number of airlines having to move to assuage concerns on the passenger or customer side from people who have been hearing 2 years of dreary, dour headlines. This plane is associated with two major plane crashes. So people are going to be nervous. So let's see how that plays out in terms of airlines and their ability to sort of move passengers around if they don't feel comfortable flying on one of these planes.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, you were talking about Boeing and its history with the Dow. I also remember, Jared, when Boeing was a proxy for the U.S.-China trade war. Remember that? And in another time, so that if the trade war was heating up, Boeing stock would go down and vice versa. And for the COVID as well. I mean, it's an interesting security to trade. You can ask traders about it. But it also has these very human elements that we have to consider, which are most central to its business. So it will be something to watch it redeploy this aircraft out there. So we'll be watching people as they begin to get more comfortable flying, perhaps maybe not this month as much because we're still way off the peaks, but into next year and Boeing, and see how that rollout goes of the 737 MAX. Apple, two more trading days left, so we'll see how it does. And then the Intel saga, no doubt, will spill into 2021. This is the Market Wake Up by Yahoo Finance. I'm Andy Serwer, along with Javier David and Jared Blickrey. Have a good day.